Welcome, everybody, to the Turkey Day edition of the Penn Stated Football Podcast, not the Ham Day edition of the podcast this week, as James Franklin might lead you to believe. Your host, Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times-Tribune, Sam Freeman from the Citizen's Voice joining us, and we're coming at you after a pretty big win against Rutgers. Now, I know what that sounds like. Everyone's going to say, oh, it's Rutgers. You should beat Rutgers. And of course, Penn State should beat Rutgers. Penn State always beats Rutgers. Rutgers hasn't scored against Penn State, a touchdown anyway, at Beaver Stadium since not only way before Sam was born, but before I graduated high school, which was a long, long time ago. But Sam, I thought we learned a little bit about Penn State in this game. Number one, I guess we'll start with the quarterbacks. We always you should anyway. Drew Aller gets a shot to the head slash arm slash upper body somewhere, leaves the game, and Bo Prabula takes over, and they proceed to do what Michigan did the week before: 21 plays, 20 runs. What was your takeaway from that? I'm getting a lot of interesting emails and DMs and tweets saying that, you know, clearly Penn State's offense works better with Prabula. I have some thoughts on that, but do you think it's a better offense when Bo Prabula is the quarterback than when Drew Aller is, or is that just kind of one thing that happened on a day when a lot of other factors fell into place?
Well, I mean, I think it's more, and believe me, this is not to take away from Prabula's performance on Saturday, but you know, I think it's more of the latter. I think, you know, we saw this a couple years ago with Christian Bayer, you know, coming in on that flu day when Penn State was missing so many players. And, you know, suddenly Bayer looked like a starting caliber quarterback. And obviously he transfers out, goes to Pitt, and, you know, he just won the starting job, and he's not playing poorly, but he's not dominating the way that he dominated that Rutgers game. You know what I mean? While I'm sure we'll get into this at some point, but you know, while I don't love discounting performances against Rutgers because it's still a Division I program, it's still, you know, it's still a win that teams should be invested in and everything like that. But you know, I think that Prabula coming in, it was obviously because Drew got hurt. Drew goes down. They weren't expecting to have to go to Prabula for such an extended period of time. You know, he did his job. He did what a backup quarterback's supposed to do: come in and, you know, on a you know, smaller, diminished playbook, you know, come in and just make sure not to rock the boat. You know, he had some explosive plays and everything. I mean, he moved really well with his legs, but I don't know how much to take away from that. I feel like the amount of I've also seen, because they ran so much, you know, maybe Bo can't throw the ball. I don't think that this is evidence of that either. It was, I'm sure it was a mixture of a lot of different things. I mean, the fact that it's the first game that Howell and Sider are, you know, co-offensive coordinators, and Rutgers prepared all week for a Drew Aller-led offense. I think it's a mixture of all sorts of things. I mean, props to Bo for stepping in and doing it, because we've seen backup Penn State quarterbacks step in and just look rattled before, and he didn't look like that. But at the same time, there are a lot of crazy takes being thrown around on social media that, you know, I think we can pretty easily dispel, or at least pump the brakes on.
Yeah, I agree. Not even to an extent. I agree fully. I was going to say I agree to an extent, but somebody asked, I forget who it was, but somebody asked, I think it was Keaton Ellis after the game the other day, it was the craziest simple question that you could have. And Ellis just laughed at it originally because it was just right to the point. But the question was, can Bo Prabula throw? I mean, we don't know. And so I looked up some numbers earlier today because I am writing about this very subject. And before we go on with this, James Franklin, we're recording this on Monday because of the holiday. James Franklin's press conference just happened about an hour ago, and he did say that he believes Drew Aller will play on Friday against Michigan State. I almost said Mississippi State. I have Mississippi State on the mind for, I don't know why, but Michigan State on Friday. But so I looked up the numbers on Prabula, and they're kind of fascinating because there's no way to break them down without coming up with the same numbers. And what I mean by that is, on the season, Bo has been in there for 118 snaps, which is a pretty good amount of snaps. It's not a small sample size worth of snaps. I mean, 29 of them came against Delaware, but he played a bunch. He played 15 against Illinois, 14 in Iowa, 16 against Maryland, 21 last week. He's getting significant enough playing time where the numbers kind of will matter. Do you want to take a guess on the percentage of those plays that were passes?
Oh man, it's got to be low. Let me say 25%.
It's lower. It's 17. It's 16.9. Jeez. Now, yeah, it's a comically low number. Now, is there reasons for that? Yes. I mean, he's in at the end of the game when you're winning, number one. So Penn State obviously is not going to throw the ball. I mean, I shouldn't say that. The one play he played against Northwestern, he threw a touchdown pass. And it was, he did not have to do it, or the percentage would be lower. But the number is 17%. I mean, any way you slice it, 16.9%. But it's, you know, he's in there at the, you know, when he's leading by 40 points, they're obviously going to run most of the time. But again, 20 passes and 118 plays, 17%, 16.9. But if you take the Delaware game out, where he threw 5 passes and 29 plays, the number is still right around 17%. If you take away the Maryland game where he threw his most passes, still around 17%. So there's really no outlier in the numbers that would say he's going to throw more than that, which you could look at it many ways. Like I said, number one, it's the situations in the game. Okay, I get that. That makes perfect sense. Number two, well, he's a better runner. Okay. So he's going to run more. I get it. But the third way to look at that is he doesn't throw the ball very well. And there's no escaping that. Now, Ellis, when he laughed off the question, said, no, he could really throw. He can make all the throws. You know, we've seen it, whatever. And James said today, when he was asked about Bo's ability to throw the ball, said there's a lot there that you haven't seen. I think that was almost exactly what he said. Why should we believe that? We haven't seen it. In this, I think one thing you've learned about Penn State this season is don't believe what you haven't seen on offense, because a lot of the stuff we were talking about in August, we still haven't seen. So I guess if Bo was ever going to be the starting quarterback, I mean, this year, and there's a lot of time for Bo to get to the point where he could be a starting quarterback and at Penn State and be a pretty good one and develop into that kind of a passer. But right now, I have no confidence that Penn State's going to put Bo Prabula in and they're going to be a balanced attack. I think if they put him in, let's say Drew can't play on Friday for whatever reason, even though it does sound like he's going to play. If you put Bo Prabula in there, convince me he's not going to throw 17% of the time. And you're going to have one of these games where they run the ball 49 times and throw it 15. I completely see that coming, and that's my kind of my response to all the people who would like to see more Bo Prabula, a kind of a change at the top of the offense. Prove it to me. Prove to me that you could at least maybe try to be balanced with Bo.
I was going to say I think you're right, but the numbers are the numbers. You know what I mean? They're unambiguous in that sense. And you know, I'm with you. We've said it multiple times this year. It's been said ad nauseum in sports media that the backup quarterback is always, you know, a losing team's favorite player. And that's what's baffling to me is Penn State's not a losing team. Exactly. It's Penn State is on a track to be a 10-win team. And the backup quarterback is certain pockets of the fan base's favorite player. And I just don't see, again, like you said, there's nothing to indicate that is the case, that Bo is a better option at this stage in his career than Drew. You know, one of the beat writers last week, I think it was, tweeted out something about, you know, there was a fan complaining about, you know, how bad the receivers have been or something like that, something to that effect. And the reporter quote tweeted it and said, you know, in fairness to Penn State, you know, they were pretty clear coming into the season that, you know, there was a lot of malleability in that receiver room, and everybody just decided not to believe it. And then, you know, we all ignore it at the beginning of the year. The season goes on. The receivers are less than expectations. They fall short of expectations. And then everybody starts to get frustrated and start questioning. And I think you're seeing the same thing here with Bo. You know, it's no shot at Bo. I mean, they're both sophomores. They'll have time to grow. The idea that, you know, Bo has some untapped potential that is being held back by the coaching staff or held back by Drew at the top of the depth chart, there's no evidence for that. If that ends up being true, then, you know, I'll eat my sock. But it's not there's no evidence yet. And at this point, after how we handled the receivers this season, you know, I'm going to trust them on this one.
Yeah, here's the other thing that I really enjoy about fans. And look, there's no show here with no fans, and I don't have a job with no fans, and Sam doesn't have a job with no fans. So we appreciate all of you on this most festive of weeks, Thanksgiving. So thanks to you. But a couple of years ago, it wasn't very long ago, that Trace McSorley, who I thought was a fantastic quarterback, I loved watching Trace McSorley play for 3 years, and you hear a lot, not, I want to say a lot, a certain segment of the certain segment would say they're not getting where they need to go with a guy that's limited in certain areas like Trace McSorley. And I don't know that Trace McSorley was limited in certain areas. I think he was a heck of a player, but I get it. He wasn't a big time prospect. He's not he's a guy who was tougher than he was gifted at times, I think, but he was a guy who could run the ball a little bit. I don't think he runs the ball as well as Bo does, but I think he could run the ball a little bit, and he could make the deep throws and all that stuff, yada, yada, yada. And then Clifford comes in, and it's like, we're never getting where we want to go unless we have a five-star guy. Clifford's a nice kid, loves the program, not going to get you over the top. Then you have the five-star kid, and within 10 games, it's like, he's not good enough. Let's go to the backup, who kind of reminds me of the guy we had two quarterbacks ago. And maybe that's as good as we could ever do. If you don't give a guy a chance to develop, you're never going to learn what he is. I think it's kind of fascinating in a way to look at the quarterback situation and say, Drew doesn't have it. How do you know? What if he transfers to Ohio State and dominates? Because that's what he would do. If you put Bo Prabula at starting quarterback, Drew's gone, kiss him goodbye, and he goes somewhere else and becomes this NFL guy. You know, it looks worse for James. It looks worse for whoever the offensive coordinator is going to be, the quarterback's coach, Yurcich, whoever you want to say. You're kind of shortchanging Drew by giving him this X amount of time. And look, like, so I'm a Steelers fan, and I never talk about the Steelers because I don't like to talk about a team I root for. But they have a quarterback. Kenny Pickett's their quarterback. Kenny Pickett is as bad as I've ever seen in the end. He's just terrible. But you know what? I knew he was going to be bad. I knew it. And it hasn't worked. And I think in 2 years, now it's clear it hasn't worked. So the Steelers kind of, in my opinion, would have to move on. I don't think anybody was saying after 10 games, Kenny Pickett's got to go. You give it time, and you are hearing, got to go. He's got to go. He's not good enough. And I think it's ridiculous. But that said, he was 6 for 13 on Saturday. There's issues here with the guy. I think, and I'm writing about this for later in the week, so I don't want to step on my own toes here, but is the best way to go about this to develop some receivers, to tweak the offense you currently have, bring in the next guy, hope he gets through to Drew in a way that Yurcich maybe didn't, improve him in that way? Or do you look at what they did on Saturday and say, this zone running attack works? It worked against Iowa. It works against a really good Rutgers run defense. And again, people are going to chuckle when I say that, but statistically it is. It's a very good run defense. And Penn State ran all over those two teams with this kind of zone style. Bo makes that a better attack. So is there a case going forward where, even if we're going to concede that Aller is the best guy, and I think he is, and I think you have to stick with him, he's your best chance of having a good offense. And I hate the two quarterback system. Hate it. You want your best quarterback out there all the time. But is there a case to be made that the Bo Prabula package, quote unquote, should be a regular part of the offense? I don't know. I'm not convinced, but you look at the two best games, that they played on offense outside of UMass and Delaware. I would argue it's Rutgers and Iowa. Why would they not do that more often?
Yeah, I mean, when you find things that work, you know, I feel like you got to go with them, especially at this point in the season. We talked about that heading into the Ohio State and Michigan games. You know, the time for experimentation is kind of gone. You know, when you get this late in the season, but there was something you said about the quarterback development that really sticks out to me. You know, when a lot of the top coaches at these top programs, you know, when they do the press conferences and they, you know, and they talk at practice and everything, they really try to use coach speak and, you know, avoid saying too much while still, you know, giving the press what they want, that sort of thing. But so when a coach breaks that coach speak, I tend to believe them, whether they're doing it honestly or they're doing it to advance some other idea. They're doing it for a reason. There's something to really unpack there. And the way James talked about the Yurcich decision last week, whether you believe him or you don't, he was pretty straightforward saying, you know, there were some, we had some disagreements and it wasn't clicking. You know, I don't want to rehash last week's discussion, but talk about Yurcich as a quarterback developer. We still don't know at this point in Drew's career what he is. You know, he's still very unproven. And so the fact that they move off of Yurcich to me means, you know, they don't know either. You know, they're not confident that they have enough information to, you know, if they thought Drew stunk, you know, Drew wouldn't be at the top of the depth chart. How could you know? I mean, you brought up the receivers. The receivers haven't played to the level that was expected coming into the year. And how can you correctly assess Drew when, you know, a play that sticks out to me in the Rutgers game, and I think you tweeted about it because I think I liked some of the stuff you had tweeted. There was a play where, you know, Drew threw to a presumptive out route and Dante Cephas just wasn't there. And it was such a timing-based throw that clearly there was a miscommunication. You know, that falls on off-season preparation and chemistry. And, you know, that's not necessarily Drew can't play. He just threw it to nobody. You know what I mean? There's something not clicking. And the fact that they move off of Yurcich to me tells me, you know, this isn't Drew can't play. You know what I mean? It's we need to figure out multiple things on this offense so we can figure out what we have in Drew. And, you know, if you pull the plug early, you're never going to have, you're never going to know what you have. If Drew plays a season and you pull him for Bo, and then Bo plays a season, and you pull him for Smolik, and then you pull him after a season, you know, you're never going to find your guy unless you strike gold, which is so rare, especially in college football. I mean, you see in the NFL, it's difficult, but it's so rare in college football to have that player come in right away as a first-year starter and just blow up. I mean, look at two of the big Heisman candidates this year, Bo Nix and Michael Penix. You know, they were borderline laughing stocks earlier in their career, and you know they go to a new they have a fresh coat of paint on them, and all of a sudden they're going to see themselves in New York next year. You got to give quarterbacks especially time. It's a really hard position to play, and if you're gonna pull plugs within a year, within 10 games, talk about not ever getting past that ceiling.
It's interesting you bring up Nix and Penix because, I mean, Penix famously beat Penn State, but the next year they went out and famously destroyed the guy. And then Nix got completely outplayed by Sean Clifford. If you had asked after that game in 2021 between Auburn and Penn State at Beaver Stadium, if you would ask 108,000 Penn State fans, who would you rather have at quarterback, Bo Nix or Sean Clifford? 108,000 Penn State fans are going to say Sean Clifford. So, yeah, that's what it is. It's development. It's finding the right fit. I think a lot of it is scheme, especially with Nix. I think that's an offense that really fits what he does well. Penix is, I think when he's healthy and protected, a very good quarterback. Best player in the country, I don't know. But Nix and that offense, getting rid of the ball quick, able to make the first read and be decisive with it, that's clearly his style. And that's not what they did at Auburn. So, and that's the one thing about prospects and high school coaches and parents, you know, getting these kids to the program they get to first out of high school. sometimes it's the wrong program. Sometimes it isn't the right fit, and they're not equipped to know that. I think Drew is. I think this offense is a fit for Drew, but I'm not sure it's been a fit for these receivers. And, you know, if I'm going to knock Drew in one way, and I think he's not blameless here, obviously, but you can't go a game without, and this kind of falls on the offensive coordinators too, but you can't go a game without targeting your best wideout. You know, Keandre Lambert-Smith has to touch the ball once or twice. That makes you a better team. And you could, I mean, can you imagine not throwing the ball to Dotson? You go into a game and Jahan Dotson never sees it. I mean, they invented plays to get the guy the ball. I think there's ways that you could, you know, get the wideouts more involved. And I think that's the one criticism I'll have. I don't think the wideouts are good enough to sit here and outside of Lambert-Smith to sit here and complain about, you know, why aren't they getting better? I'm just not sure they're good enough at this level, but I think you can maybe figure out how to get them going a little bit. But Dante Cephas, that's a play. I remember the tweet because I remember the play, and it's funny because I had more than one person. And again, people you respect saying, well, but Cephas was open. Well, that's not how football is. That's not how the position is played. You throw that ball before the break. So if you're expecting Dante Cephas, by what you're reading and what he's reading and what you've practiced and what your offensive philosophy is and what your offense is doing on a given play, to read the out and you throw the out, you're not waiting around to see what Dante Cephas actually does. If you throw the out and he runs the in cut or he does a button hook and the ball flies out of bounds, you look like the fool. And that's part of the thing with being a quarterback is sometimes you're going to look like a fool. And I think Drew, some of his passes to fall incomplete near nobody. That's what happens. I really believe that the communication issues between Aller and the receivers are paramount right now. And the next offensive coordinator has to either simplify that part of it or come up with something new because it's just not working. And, you know, they have to go into this offseason. I don't know what the transfer portal is going to look like with receivers. It was pretty good last year, and it was so good last year that Penn State got a couple of good receivers out of the portal, highly rated ones, if you believe the ratings, and Cephas and Malik McClain. And at least in that part of the game, outside of McClain for a game earlier this year, it might have been the West Virginia game, and Cephas against Maryland, they've been complete non-factors in the passing game. And if that was going to be the case, if we had known that in August, then you knew Penn State was going to have some big problems. But yeah, I think with Drew, the numbers have not been great. James said today, oh, the numbers are pretty good. Well, the one number is pretty good. The 21 touchdowns and one interception, that's pretty good. But the rest of them, I don't think that's exactly what he's capable of in any regard as being a top flight college football quarterback. And I think he will be. I think he will be someday, and I think he'll be that for Penn State, but you got to give him a little bit of time. There's just not you just haven't seen enough. I mean, we talk about sample sizes and look, I'm guilty of it. I just said, what it was, 118 plays. That's a pretty good sample size for Bo. And that now I'm telling you that a whole season isn't a good enough sample size for Drew, but it's not to show you what he can be. 118, that shows you what Bo is right now. Nobody knows what these two guys can be, but I think we're both on the same page here that Bo, his skills are limited compared to what Drew's are. And you run with what Drew could be in that regard.
And I mean, you even look back to him at high school. You know, he was a three-star recruit for a majority of his career. Penn State goes after him while he's at that stage in his development. And then all of a sudden he blossoms into the number one quarterback in the country and a five-star recruit that goes to development. I mean, he was a, you could call him a late bloomer in high school if you want to. There's no indication that he can't have a, you know, with the right coach and with the right amount of preparation and the right team around him, he can't blossom again in college. You know, he starts as, you want to call him a three-star college quarterback right now. You know, he could blossom into a five-star college quarterback over the course of the offseason. To me, you know, and you know, we talked about this before, numbers don't tell the whole story always, but that 21-1 number, to me, that indicates he's protecting the ball. You know, and you can have the argument, is he protecting it too much? You can argue, you know, that doesn't account for incompletions, that just accounts for interceptions. That doesn't account for turnover worthy plays that don't end up as turnovers. But regardless, 21-1 is a legitimate ratio that should be that should be commended. And for a first year starter to be able to protect the ball at that level, now you go, okay, that might be the hard part, especially when you look at Clifford in the past, who, was a very good college quarterback, had turnover concerns occasionally, if not more than occasionally. And, if Drew's got the hard part down of protecting the ball, now we can focus on let's unlock some of this potential that you have. To me, it says that he's a lot of the time, even if you want to say he's not making the right throw, he's avoiding making the wrong throw.
Yeah, those throws that go near nobody, that drive everybody nuts, that look awful, they aren't caught by the other team either. So that's that is a big thing. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but sometimes it's the people around you who make you what you are. And Penn State has, I think, run the ball better the last couple of weeks. I definitely thought they ran it. I would say outside of Ohio State, they ran the ball pretty well. And I think they gave up on Ohio State. So I would say they've run the ball okay this year. And they're not breaking off 80-yard runs as often as people want. That is what it is. I mean, people are playing you that way. They're not going to let that happen. They saw that last year, and you'd be dumb as a defensive coordinator to say, let's play them the way we played them last year and watch Nick Singleton just rip off 80-yard runs. You'd be dumb. But look, you mentioned Bo Nix earlier. And this is a great example. Bo Nix might win the Heisman. He really might. Is Bo Nix the best player in the country? Yeah, you could say that he's played to that level this year. But why? Why has he been? Well, he's in this great offense at Oregon that they take advantage of what he is, and Auburn never did. Yeah, that's great. But here's the other thing that I think we should maybe consider. Oregon has better receivers than Auburn did. Oregon has a pretty good running game. They have an offense that works. They also do one thing very well that Auburn didn't. They don't play in the SEC. They don't play those defenses. So, hey, those defenses might have something to say about Bo Nix. And I think that's kind of true about Aller too. They're going to force Aller to beat you, but Drew Aller can't beat you if he doesn't have players that he can beat you with. No quarterback is. Clifford would have had a regression this year. I'm kind of convinced that he's not going to turn Keandre Lambert-Smith into Jerry Rice, and he would have needed to, because that's all they really have. Cephas continues to be sometimes really good, sometimes more often than not, just kind of out there. Caden Saunders was announced as a starter last week. I don't know that I saw him get a target. Same with McLean. When he's out there, doesn't get targeted. Omari Evans caught a pass last week. And I said at the time, that's a guy Penn State needs. That's a guy who could really run, good size, showed a lot of promise last year. And I would almost wager that there's some stuff going on that is preventing him from being on the field all the time this year, because he's not been on the field. That's a guy we thought was going to be a starter in August. It's like, oh, wow, I forgot they had Omari Evans. He just caught a 15-yard pass. Liam Clifford had a catch this week. I think they were the two catches by the wideouts. Two catches by the wideouts. It's not, that shows you something. It shows you that they just don't have the weaponry there. And a team like Rutgers, who has some good defensive backs, who has a coach who's smart enough to know if we take this guy out of it, we might be okay. And I'm sure he doesn't think you're going to take him completely out of it. But in this case, and for some reasons that, what Penn State was doing on offense contributed to that. But this just is not a good enough receiving core to judge Aller on in any regard. And James said today something about the tight ends, but you guys said we weren't targeting the tight ends earlier this year enough. Yeah, I guess. I don't know who said that, but I don't know how much more often you could target the tight ends. They're the only guys who are playing well. I mean, and Theo Johnson and Tyler Warren are probably NFL guys, but you want to target the tight end 10 times? That's not a big play threat. The wideouts are different than the tight ends. Yeah. And the wideouts are different than the backs. You get those guys the ball in space against cornerbacks who may or may not be the best tacklers on on the defense. You know, who knows? That's where you gain 5, 6, 7 easy yards. Those are the guys who are going to make those easy plays that Franklin was talking about 2 weeks ago, just a couple hours before he told Mike Yurcich to hit the road. So I think that unless you fix the wideout position, it doesn't matter what Drew does, because we don't know. We're never going to see what he's fully capable of if you don't surround him with the talent that he needs. And that's like, it's, you'll see it in the NBA all the time. Oh, Kevin Durant's a great player. Let's surround him with 3 other great players and see what he can do. Well, people think, shouldn't a great player be able to carry you? But that's not the way it works. Sometimes they can for stretches, but not for seasons. And I think Drew at this point is not number one, not only not capable of carrying a team, but right now not able. So I think that's what we're, I think that's where Penn State is at with Aller heading into 2024. Really, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he played well in the bowl game, but you know, that's going to be because they went back to work on the offense. Sam will be back in the second segment here to talk about something that is going really right for Penn State, the defense, and what they have to do to keep that going in 2024, which is probably an obvious answer. Sam, the Big Ten, one of my favorite organizations in the world, announced today that its weekly football award winners, Offensive Player of the Week, Defensive Player of the Week, Special Teams Player of the Week. Who do you think the Defensive Player of the Week was? If you haven't,
I'm not sure. Who was it?
Mike Sanders still of Michigan. I don't know what he did. I did not watch that game. You know why that's interesting? You know why I bring that up here on this Thanksgiving edition? And it's not to impress Joe Barrais and all the Michigan fans in Northeastern Pennsylvania. It's to tell you this. Penn State hasn't had a Defensive Player of the Week in the Big Ten all year. How impossible is it, the way they've played from the start of the season to now, that they haven't had a guy who was worthy of being Big Ten Player of the Week on defense? I'm asking. We're sitting here wondering ourselves. I don't think we have an answer to it.
You know, that unit has been largely what's kept Penn State in the top half of the top 25, I feel like. I mean, certainly you see how the offense has played, and it's not them.
Yeah, you could argue, I think this is the best defense in the country. You really can do it. If you want to look at the numbers, I mean, their numbers are just outstanding. I think they're number one or two in total defense. They're number one or two in so many categories that it seems like a waste of time to list them all, but they kind of handled Ohio State. Only no Big Ten team has held Ohio State to 20 points or less than that. They held Michigan to easily the fewest amount of yards that they had on the season to that point. And I posed this to a bunch of different guys after the game and got some really great answers about it and wrote about it a little bit. And I am going to expand on it because this is leading to a legitimate question that we're going to have to answer here on the podcast in a couple of moments. But I asked some guys, you know, how difficult is this to kind of play at the level that this defense has played from the start of the season to now? Do you remember a stretch where you thought this group is not playing extremely well? I don't remember a stretch, even like a couple of series in a game. I think they've not been figured out this year.
Really, in all facets of the defense, they've been really strong. They haven't won every game, but it's not something that, you know, that's not really the way that you measure, you know, a unit. And they've developed consistent pressure against quarterbacks. They've largely swallowed up the run. You know, it's not just one or two players. I think that's what's, you know, it's really a hallmark of Manny Diaz's defensive system at Penn State is, you know, rotating guys in early and often. And sure, you have the players like Chop Robinson, who I think, you know, what coming into this season was tapped by a lot of people as a potential first round pick. I really think he's played himself firmly in that discussion. You have guys like Chop, you have guys like Abdul Carter, but It's not like they've been the only contributors on defense. It's been a horde of players that have really done a lot for promulgating the way that this defense has performed.
Yeah, I'm going to go through some of the numbers. I think it's probably important to do that to kind of give you some idea of where they rank statistically in the nation. The first downs defense, number two in the country. Rushing first downs for opponents, 53. Opposing passing first down, 76. They've allowed the second fewest first downs in the country behind Michigan. Rushing defense. Now, I granted that, minus 51 or whatever they had against Maryland factors in, but they're third in the nation, number two in the FBS in rush defense. Scoring defense, number four. They've been very good. And I don't remember a stretch at any point this season where I thought, someone's figured out something against the Penn State defense. Nope. They've just been so consistently good. And the reason they don't have a defensive player of the week is because it's pretty much a shared effort all up and down. I mean, there's probably weeks where Adisa Isaac's been the best defensive player in the conference, but the numbers aren't there because Chop Robinson's getting sacks and Carter's getting in there and Curtis Jacobs is getting in there. And there's some weeks where Johnny Dixon's the best player on the field for Penn State. And he's amazingly, Johnny Dixon has a sack in four of the last five games. It's crazy. Johnny Dixon plays cornerback. It's not his job to sack the quarterback, but there he comes. He's a really, really good player. And they find ways to get every guy involved. I mean, there was a big interception in the Rutgers game by KJ Winston, who I think he's not really been mentioned a whole ton this year on this podcast or very many, but I think he's been really solid from the start of the season to now. He's going to be a game-breaking player next season and the year after. I'm convinced KJ Winston's an NFL guy. Jalen Reed's been really good. James Franklin touted Kobe King after the game. He had 10 tackles. I think he's the first guy with 10 tackles this year and a win. People say, Carter hasn't been as dynamic this year, but I think he's been, on the whole, better. I think he's playing more of a well-rounded linebacker spot. Jacobs kind of floats in and out. But he's got some dominant weeks. There's some weeks you don't notice him, but there's some weeks where he's dominant. And you can go on and on. Devonta Lees is playing great. He's been clearly their best defensive tackle to me. But, you can't look at that group and say Kaziah Izard hasn't played well or Durant hasn't played well. They've had guys. Beeman has had his moments. Every guy on this defense has had his moment. And there are just too many superlatives for the defense. We can't go on and on forever about it. But it does lead to a good question here. Friday night, they play at Michigan State. This very well could be Manny Diaz's last game as Penn State's defensive coordinator because teams are going to want that guy to either run their defense or run their whole team. I personally would be okay with Manny Diaz running my program. I'd be thrilled with that if I'm looking for a new guy. I don't know where the job fits in. Syracuse just opened. I think that they're in the ACC. I don't know, that's a fit for Manny. I think Manny would like to be in Florida if he could. And there's a lot of places I think that are going to open up that are going to have him on the short list. We've heard USC looking for a defensive coordinator. They have a lot of money out there. Would they just throw money out there, out at Manny, bring him out to the West Coast and see what he can do, just see if that scheme would work with what they have. I think Penn State's got to do whatever they can do. And James Franklin mentioned it at the press conference today, which is kind of why I'm bringing it up. If you're Penn State, don't you have to have Manny Diaz back? I mean, you could replace Mike Yurcich. There are offensive coordinators out there, and you could fake it a little bit, even for a year, find someone who's got a different kind of scheme than everybody else, kind of fool them. But Manny's not fooling anybody. Manny's overpowering people right now with that scheme. And nobody else is running it. For James Franklin to say that Manny has elevated the defense, considering that the guy who ran the defense before is inarguably the closest confidant James Franklin's ever had on a football field in Brent Pry, says exactly what the job this guy has done. Penn State cannot lose this guy for another defensive coordinator's job. Head coach, okay. That's going to happen. He's not going to get the Penn State head coaching job next year. But Penn State has to do whatever it can, I would think, even if it costs them some money in the offensive coordinator search to keep Manny Diaz. Manny Diaz is way more important than anybody they're going to bring in an offensive coordinator.
Absolutely. More than 100% would I agree with that. You know, really the lifeblood of this team the last couple of years has been the defense, and especially this year, as we mentioned just a minute ago. You know, I remember talking to players last season, especially Jair Brown, you know, one of the big leaders of the Penn State defense while he was in Happy Valley. You know, and you know, the way he would talk about Manny was, you know, almost quasi-religious and just very, you know, you could tell how much, you know, love and respect he had for Diaz. I mean, just the way he would talk about his relationship with Diaz and the way that Diaz sees defense and the way that Diaz would talk to him about life and leadership and all this stuff. You don't hear that about many coaches at any level. I mean, the connection he seems to have with these players, and I just use Tig as one example, you know, all these players, you know, seem to just revere Diaz and his leadership. And I would be foolish to discount that as a reason for why this defense is so successful. And that's all outside of the schematic stuff that he brings. Then you start looking at, as we said, the results and of his scheme with just how many players get involved and how many players seem to elevate in this defense. As you said, Johnny Dixon being, you know, some incredible pass rusher at the cornerback position is proof of it. Diaz is very creative. He's very aggressive, you know, and defenses get beat sometimes. So that's going to happen. You know, I, to me, that seems like an irreplaceable part of not only the way that this team has been successful, but frankly, you know, part of the culture. And I know that's thrown around a lot. You know, it's kind of a hard thing to define is the culture that a coach brings, but I think you really feel it. I mean, you know, I know that a pocket of social media sort of roasts him for his head coaching tenure at Miami. I tend to think there were some other things going on at Miami that would have made it hard for any coach to succeed. But you look at some of the stuff he did there that he either, you know, brought elements of over here, you know, turnover chain. Players loved that at Miami, sort of rejuvenated that defense. Obviously, they have, you know, the Penn State, the hard hit sledgehammer or whatever. Yeah, but regardless, he injects a sort of swagger from the top down that I don't see how you can replace that. And as you said, I would feel very comfortable if I was an athletic director, seeing the way Manny seems to relate with his players and the results he has, at least on the defensive side. If I was an athletic director, he would be on the top of my short list. You know, do I think he's going to take that lateral move to a defensive coordinator position? I mean, maybe the Florida thing, you know, he wanting to go back home, perhaps that could be a confounding variable. But, you know, I've seen USC a lot, like you said. I've seen some other things thrown around. To me, that would be surprising. Just talking to him at the Rose Bowl last year, you know, he said one of the exciting things about going back to be a defensive coordinator is that, you know, number one, he's still involved in a high profile program. You know, he's able to do some great stuff with some great players. But he said that this allows him to be more selective with his head coaching opportunities. That's what he said. You know, maybe something changed over the last year. Who knows? But that, to me, that seems like the right move from an outsider's perspective. And that's how he felt, you know, January of last year or December of last year, whenever it was. To me, you got to make sure that, you know, you are the top option at defensive coordinator. Don't leave. You know, we're going to give you X to make sure that you don't leave for a lateral position. Like you said, somebody leaves for a head coaching position, it is what it is. You know, you're not firing James Franklin to elevate Manny Diaz. But to me, that, like you said, that's top priority.
Yeah, I would rather have a bad offensive coordinator in Manny Diaz than a really good offensive coordinator and someone less than Manny Diaz. And Penn State's had that combination in the past. And I'm not trying to knock Brent Pry. Brent Pry was a really good defensive coordinator. Brent Pry had some great defenses. He's not Manny Diaz. If Manny Diaz walks out the door on Saturday for another job, you aren't replacing that. You're never getting it back because he's gone. So you have to do whatever you can to make sure he doesn't make that lateral move. I don't think he will. I think Manny, if you're going to be selective with head coaching jobs, you're definitely going to be selective with defensive coordinator jobs. I don't know that idea that, you know, he's going to make $9 million a year or whatever it is going out to LA to try to rebuild that mess is all that attractive to him. And he's not making nothing at Penn State. You know, Penn State's paying him okay. He's still collecting on what Miami owes him. So Manny's doing okay with him for himself. And something that James said today that was interesting to me is what he feels they've built at Penn State is a culture where coaches want to be there, where the relationships are right with the players, with the people in the building, with the other coaches. He feels it's probably a strength of James that doesn't get talked about much, but there's a really good give and take and a fit between the assistant coaches who he brings in and what's already there. And they risked losing that with Brent, honestly. That was going to be very difficult to replace because Brent was such a good fit. But Manny comes in and he's gotten everything he can out of this defense. I don't know if this is a very talented defense, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if they're this talented. I don't know if anybody is. The way they've dominated teams this year, yeah, I get it. They give up a few too many third downs. You know, third and longs get converted on them, but they don't end up in touchdowns. For the most part, it happened against Ohio State, but they didn't always end up with a drive resulting in a touchdown. And that's the way they play. They're aggressive every play, every down. They don't take a second off. You know, when the backups are in and they're up 55-10 on Delaware, they're out there kicking their butt still. That's they're playing their scheme. That's what they do. And, you know, you mentioned Johnny Dixon earlier. There's a guy who was at South Carolina, and nobody knew who Johnny Dixon was. He was just kind of a cornerback. He was just kind of, you know, he wasn't an all SEC guy. He was trying to get some playing time. He was a younger player, but he wasn't a guy that came in and started, and he had to earn his shots down there. And he comes up to Penn State. He's a completely different player, but he's also a completely different kid by all accounts. He's more confident. He's more aggressive. And on the football field, that matters a lot. And that's Manny. Manny's instilled that view in these kids. And Chop Robinson goes to Maryland to start his career, comes back to Penn State when Manny Diaz gets there, and goes from this kind of this guy who had a lot of potential into a guy who could probably go in the first or second round of the draft. There's a lot of guys who he's gotten the most out of. So I think it's way more important to keep Manny if you can. Now, if you can't, okay, I mean, there's sometimes you just have to punt, but you can't lose him as a defensive coordinator to become another defensive coordinator. You have to treat him like a co-head coach at this point, because that's really what he is. And Penn State's defense, you know, from the start of the season till now, I said it earlier, been incredible. There's been no letdown. And you mentioned lifeblood of the team for the last couple of years. And I was thinking about this when you said it. If you had your choice and you could have your offense be the lifeblood of your team or your defense, wouldn't you choose defense? I would. And you look at the champions, the college football playoff championships ever since they went to the BCS or whatever, Georgia a couple times, defense. Clemson, as good as Travis Etienne and Trevor Lawrence were and some of those receivers, they were still a very, very sound defensive team. They dominated you up front on defense. Alabama, always a defensive team. Always, always, always a defensive team. So when you look at the college football champions, whether it be the playoffs or the BCS, who are the offensive teams? LSU? Is that really – I mean, maybe Ohio State when they won it the first year? It's really – I think when you look at it, it's clear defense – once you get to that level is what wins you the championship. Now you have to be good enough on offense. Don't get me wrong. You have to be capable, and that's where Penn State falls short. But I would dare say, and you know, maybe you think they have some work to do here. I would dare say if they can keep this level of defense, they're championship ready. And that's where they get in trouble, of course, because people start to believe, oh, they can do it. They can do it. They can do it with this defense, but they can't get to do it with the offense yet. But I think defensively they're there. that you could put that defense in the championship game with Ole Miss. Give me Ole Miss's offense and Penn State's defense, and they're winning the championship. I'm convinced of it. So, but those are two teams that aren't going to win the championship. So you have to be balanced for sure, but you need that defense to carry you a little bit, I think, if you want to be a championship level team. And I think they're there. I think Manny's got them there.
Well, you talk about how important defense is to a championship campaign, and talk about balance. Ask Caleb Williams if how important defense is. You could ask, I mean, certainly this year. I mean, it's been a disaster in California this year, but even last year, I mean, they have the New Year's Six appearance against Tulane and can't stop a nosebleed. Caleb Williams, everybody, you know, seemingly everybody is in agreement that last year Caleb would have been the number one pick. This year, everybody seems to be in agreement he'll be the number one pick. And yet, you know, Caleb never even sniffed the playoff. And it's because the defense was so porous. Now, again, that's an extremely bad defensive system that was run this year. But yeah, if they could have had if you put Penn State's defense on that USC offense.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. That's we're looking at USC a lot differently. Yeah. So the idea, I know that football has changed over time and offense is, you know, what sells tickets and everything like that. But you know, the defense is what really keeps you in it. If you're having shootouts every week, you're not going to win a shootout all the time. You know, and that's one thing is Penn State really it keeps points off the board. And as you said, if the offense starts to put it together, you start to feel a lot better about this team.
Yeah, then you have something. I've seen a lot. We're going to talk about bowl possibilities and projections and stuff like that next week. But I've seen a lot of projections to the Peach Bowl. Peach Bowl, I know for a fact, would love to have Penn State. And I know that considering the emails I get on that every day from the Peach Bowl. But I see a lot of projections on Penn State to the Peach Bowl. And you look at the opponents that and there's a that runs the gamut. But one you do see is Tulane. They're ranked in the top 25 again. They're pretty much the same idea. They could play offense. They got a really good quarterback down there. Do you, if Penn State plays Tulane in the Peach Bowl, do you see Tulane doing to them what they did to USC last year? I don't. If Manny's no. The defensive coordinator, and I mean, and you're going to look at guys who aren't going to play. And another thing we'll talk about maybe next week or in the upcoming weeks is, you know, this idea that, you know, you can opt out of the bowl game or and you know, protect your NFL chances or whatever. And they might lose a couple of guys to that this year. But let's say they do. And let's see Manny's the defensive coordinator. I still don't see them going into a Peach Bowl or any kind of bowl against a team like Tulane and not playing to that standard on defense. James mentioned standards today when I asked him about the consistency of the defense. And I could see that whoever the backup is just going to go in and play well because that's kind of what they believe and what they do. And I, you know, it's not amazing to think that you just play every play regardless of the score, regardless of the record or whatever. It's not amazing to think that could happen because that's what every coach preaches, but it's amazing when it actually does, because not every team could do that. And you mentioned USC, they don't play any defense at all. They can't do it. And it's not because they don't have players. They're good players. It's just not the way they play offense doesn't lead to it. You know, they're scoring quick. That defense is always on the field. Same with Ole Miss. And that's why I bring up the Ole Miss offense, because they're probably right in the thick of things if they could play any kind of defense, but they don't want to. Penn State wants to play an offense that's kind of complementary to what their defense could do. And I think that's probably important too, to understand in the search for an offensive coordinator. Because look, when they had Moorhead as the offensive coordinator and they were up tempo, I don't want to say they were a tempo offense, but they moved a little bit quicker. They wanted to do that. They wanted to score fast. They wanted to hit big plays, but it did affect a pretty good defense because they were on the field more. So I think the thing with Manny is he's convinced them how to play offense a little bit to maximize what the defense could do. And the last, those two games we talked about earlier with Iowa and Rutgers shows you what they could do on defense when they're playing the complementary style. So I think Penn State's on the cusp of having something great here. They don't have it yet. Clearly they haven't, you know, eventually, you know, we talked about earlier again about, you know, got to show us. They haven't shown us you could beat the Michigans and the Ohio States, and maybe that happens next year. Maybe that doesn't, whatever, but you know, I think they're on the cusp. I think it'll be very interesting if you're facing Washington, which has a good offense. Yeah, they won't have their quarterback next. They won't have Penix, but they have a good offense, a good scheme. Oregon, same thing, good scheme, fast. USC, good offense. You have to be able to stop good offenses. Those kind of teams don't win. They don't win championships. And I was kind of inspired by the Penn State fan base saying that you know, all that matters is the championships. If you can't beat Michigan and Ohio State, then you don't have the championships. And what's it all about? Well, you got to have this guy. You got to be able to play defense the way they do. And for all the consternation about the offense, shouldn't there be just as much celebration that you have this defense? And there's not.
Oh, absolutely. It's mind-boggling that you know, it gets taken for granted, I think, among people who watch Penn State more than anything, and that speaks to the idea that you said about Franklin with the standards is, you know, when Pry left, there very easily could have been, you know, some sort of rebuild process that happened, but Diaz really came in and maintained that standard.
Real quick before we go, Sam, happy Thanksgiving, first of all.
Happy Thanksgiving.
I hear people say Thanksgiving's their favorite holiday. And I love it. I don't know if it's my favorite holiday, but where's it ranked for you, and what's the preferred Thanksgiving meal? I've given my preferred Thanksgiving meal over and over again to James Franklin on those press conferences that people listen to. I want to hear yours.
Yeah, well, Thanksgiving is definitely, it's probably not my favorite holiday, but it's definitely top three, if not top two. But we do a ton of food for Thanksgiving, even when it's just the four of us with my parents and my brother. You know, we'll do turkey and a million sides, and then my dad makes like these homemade pies, and we always make, you know, we even for the four of us, we'll make like six pies in for one Thanksgiving dinner. My dad loves cooking the turkey and just all the food. So, you know, we don't go easy on Thanksgiving. That's for sure. It's turkey all the way as the main meat. And then, you know, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes with the marshmallows on top, green bean casserole, Hawaiian rolls.
Oh yeah.
Just all sorts of stuff. I love it.
That's something my wife brought to the mix was the Hawaiian rolls and the, because she's from California, so they did it a little differently out there. But we do all that stuff and more. We do the ham. We have two meals a day. Honestly, we do so we have to go to my parents afterwards. We host here. I do the turkey every year. We make the pies. It's fun. I enjoy that aspect of it. But I want to make the meat pie. Yeah. So remember the episode of Friends when she made the when Rachel made the half English trifle and half the shepherd's pie. So we saw in we watched the Great British Baking Show or the Bake Off or whatever it's called on Netflix, and it's hysterical. It's one of my favorite shows on television because I like to bake, and they can't help themselves. They're so funny on the show. But one of the, and this I think I'm going to try to do this year, but one of the things that I saw they made was this pastry. It's half a savory meat and half like a jam. So I want to try a Staffordshire tart or something like that. I don't know what they call it. It's ridiculous, but it reminds me, it's a half. It's the half English trifle, half shepherd's pie. So I'm gonna maybe try to do something like that, and I'll let you know how it is. I'm sure James will never ask about it at his press conference.
He'll be prepared for next year.
Yeah, it'll be something to talk about anyway. So I'll keep you up to date on that. Sam, again, happy Thanksgiving. Next week, we'll be back to talk about, to wrap up the season here, the regular season anyway, Penn State playing Michigan State on Black Friday in Detroit at Ford Field. We'll have the rundown of that next week. We'll talk about bowl possibilities. We'll talk about probably more about Manny Diaz. And I have a feeling, Sam, we'll be talking offensive coordinator next week. Have a feeling. Sam, again, happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to you all out there. This is Donnie Collins. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll talk again next week.